Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks again for joining me for another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Well, we're going to get right on into it tonight because I have a very special guest for you. And not only is she special, she is magical. Marla Brooks grew up knowing that there was more to this world than the naked eye would see, and found the notion of ghosts and other things that go bump in the night rather fascinating. Of course, you might also expect that from a witch. So Marla's a witch, huh? Well, she just didn't decide one day that she wanted to be a witch. It's just part of who she is. Her great-grandmother was a witch, And these things often get passed down, as you and I both know, from generation to generation. So before publicly coming out of the, as they say, the broom closet, Marla worked as a freelance entertainment writer for various national publications, mainly doing celebrity interviews, and is the author of several books in both the metaphysical and mainstream genres, including The Ghosts of Hollywood, two spell books, Workplace Spells, and Animal Spells and Magic. Also, she has written two fiction books called A Bad Case of the Collie Wobbles and Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Marla is the creator of the Witch's Oracle deck, now in its second edition, and for the last 12 years, she has been the host of Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network, heard Thursday evenings at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock Central, or 9 o'clock Eastern Time. And that link, just in case you want it right now, is www.paraxradionetwork.com. Marla is a clairaudient. And so you're wondering, well, what exactly is a clairaudient? Well, clairaudient is someone who has the ability to hear what most of us cannot hear. In other words, it's inaudible. And secondly, we're going to talk to her a little bit about that. And then she is also a sentient. And a sentient is someone who is able to perceive and feel things. So I think that's going to be kind of interesting. We're going to talk to her a little bit about that as well. One of the areas, though, in the paranormal realm that is still quite controversial, and of course is always the subject of comment, is paganism and witchcraft. And Marla Brooks mixes pagan into the paranormal with interesting and informative guests from both realms in order to help clear up misconceptions, remove the fear from the unknown, and also celebrate the magical world. So from witches to paranormal investigators and authors to astrologers, she has essentially interviewed them all. And now, tonight, she's going to do a little cauldron stirring by enlightening us into the world of witchcraft. Stay tuned.
I found it at last! Marla's Sacred Cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
And now, without further ado, my special guest, Ms. Marla Brooks. Well, hello, Marla, and thank you so much for being on my show tonight. I am so grateful to have you. So why don't we just get right at it, shall we? And maybe perhaps we could talk a little bit about your background in the metaphysical. How about that?
That sounds good. I mean, that goes back to childhood. I mean, different aspects as you grow up, but we'll say that my great-grandmother was a witch. And so I just kind of always knew. I heard my grandparents mumbling about, it was my grandfather's mother, that she was a witch, but they didn't really want me to hear, but they would always mumble, and you know, little kids have big ears. So I always knew there was something going on, and always lived in a house where things were going on, even as a kid. And yeah, they were scary, and I didn't know what they were all the time, and I really couldn't ask anybody. I was raised by my grandparents, and they didn't want me to know about that or learn about that, I guess, but it was always there. And it took, I guess when I was a teenager, I kind of got more serious about it, looking into it, and, you know, the ghosty aspect, the haunting aspect, witchcraft aspect, and it just kind of grew from there. It kind of all one thing, you know, it's a big umbrella. You know, the metaphysical world is a whole lot of things put into one. And some people kind of specialize in one thing. And being a witch is not something that I can say. It's in the blood sometimes. Let me put it that way. It can run in from generation to generation. But in my case, it skipped like three generations.
Let me jump in because I want to ask. So when people hear the word witch, okay, so we know that it's in your bloodline. We know that even though it might have skipped a few generations and it popped back into you and you knew something was a little bit, well, not peculiar, or maybe you felt a little different or whatever. Explain to us a little bit about how did you know what makes a witch, I guess.
It's a lifestyle. It's not a hobby. It's a belief system. Things like Wicca is a religion. You know, it's a nature-based religion, but and there's all different types of witchcraft, good, bad, and indifferent. But it's one of those things that you just kind of know. You know it's you. It's like an author knowing that they're writers, you know, because they've been doing that their whole lives or leading in that direction. So you just kind of, you can ignore it, or you can find out more about it and learn more about it and kind of find your path, because everybody needs to find their path in life, whether it be religious or not. So yeah, it took me a long time to kind of really embrace it. Like I said, teenager, you start it and then you start doing spells and stupid things, you know, love spells and all that. And then as you get older and learn more about it, you learn it's important to know about the ancestors. It's important to know about the history of witchcraft and things. And once you start learning that, you start thinking in a different way. And you choose your path at that point. I mean, some people like the dark arts. Some people like, you know, being all white, you know, black and white, you know, but I think the gray area is the best way to go, because that's where all the possibilities are. You know, you don't have to go by the book all the time. And so it evolved, and it's still evolving. And that's the thing. If somebody claims to be a witch and has the background and has the history down and knows a lot about it, they should also know that you never know everything and you can't stop learning. It's a constant learning process. And I think that's what's so beautiful about it.
So tell us a little bit about some of the misconceptions about it. Because when I hear the word witch, you know what we all think? We think, let's see, black cloak, black hat, standing around of, and I, by the way, I will have Marla talk to all of you about her show, Stirring the Cauldron, here, standing around a cauldron. And so, you know, you think about all of these different things about how you associate it, but a lot of us, when we think about witch, we don't think about good, like good Glenda the witch from The Wizard of Oz. We think about bad witches and what they might do to hurt people. So how do you break down these barriers a little bit to try to help people understand that not all witches are bad?
Well, that's why I got my show. It was an opportunity to kind of spread the word that witches are people. And I joke, and people get really scared about this, but I'm pretty sure that everybody that's listening right now knows someone who's a witch, but may not know they're a witch. Because we don't, I mean, okay, I wear black, but you know, it's slimming, so whatever. but it's one of those things where you have to be yourself, and people think that we have warts and green complexions and eat babies and all this stuff, but we're everyday people, and that's why I'm saying you may know somebody that's a witch and not know that they are, because there's nothing that, okay, I wear a pentagram around my neck, but I don't, you know, I kind of keep it tucked in public because there are people who have a misconception also about the pentagram, so I keep it tucked away. Otherwise, people kind of, it's good if you're in the grocery line checking out and they see you and you've got a whole line in front of you, and then, you know, they see that, they do kind of part the way like Moses, and they'll let you through because they're afraid. But this is the whole thing about my show. I'm teaching people different things, different aspects of the metaphysical world, but in particular, you know, in the beginning, there was a lot of witchcraft things that people were asking and the misconceptions that, you know, we're all evil, we all have warts, we all do bad spells. It's crazy. I mean, anytime you see something coming out of Hollywood, you know that that's the misconceptions that you're probably going to get. Harry Potter is an exception, and it's a great, really good fiction thing, but there are aspects of truth in that. And one of the things that that movie series did, or the book series, both, made people realize that witches are just real people. They just do different things, you know, deal differently with certain things. And so I think by talking so much about this stuff on my show and having different types of witches on, you know, I've had water witches and cottage witches and stregas, which are kind of tough and don't have the simple things like the threefold law, that if you do three something bad, you get it back three times, good or bad. There are certain aspects of strega that they do what they think they need to do and don't have that worry.
Interesting. Let's we're going to go back to this in just a moment when we talk about spells, but I want to shift gears for a second here, because I think the listeners need to know that you have a very interesting background, especially when it involves Hollywood and haunted Hollywood and aspects about that. So I think if I read your bio correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, were you not at one time an investigator? And can you tell us a little bit about that type of background? We're going to shift gears to the paranormal a little bit, and then we're going to reconnect all this with going back into witchcraft and spells in just a moment. So,
well, like I said, I've always been interested in ghosts and hauntings and all that stuff. And way back about 2005, a friend of mine, Scott Michaels, has a company called Dearly Departed Tours. And he goes to all the haunted places in Hollywood and Beverly Hills, you know, with the actors and this and that. And he was approached by a publisher to do a book about that. And he just didn't have the time. I mean, his business was thriving and everything. And he told that editor to get in touch with me, that maybe I would do. And so all of a sudden I'm hearing from a publisher that they want a book on haunted Hollywood. And as you know, people don't have that fall in their lap very often. Lots of people want to have a book, but this one is, the book came to me. And I said, sure, you know, okay, I think I can do it, because I mean, Hollywood has a great history of hauntings and things like that, and lots of stories, but I wanted to make it a little bit different. Instead of just doing another ghost book about the histories of the stories that people have told for hundreds of years about certain places and stuff and hauntings, I wanted to get out there and investigate myself. And so I had a couple of people that did that. I know that, a videographer and also another investigator who happens to be a witch, which kind of helps. And she's a medium also, so it kind of works good on investigations. And so we kind of put this team together, and then we started formatting, well, where are we going to go and can we go to certain places? We did some research and we started lining up investigations in order to have a story for the book on these different places that is different from the stories that you might have heard before, or at least there might be some more interesting things when you go yourself and you learn. So that's kind of how the book started. And I did one book, and as soon as I was done with it, I turned it in. She said, okay, we're ready for book two. And I went, what? And she says, yeah, I think we need to make a series of, because you hardly scratch the surface. I mean, Hollywood is big and so many hauntings and so many things. And so we ended up doing three books. So there's a series of ghosts, it's called Ghosts of Hollywood. And there are three books and I could probably write some more. But that was the first time I was really out doing any investigations. I hadn't done that before. I mean, I was doing stuff at home and doing that kind of thing,
so
never out in public.
So let's delve into some of these investigations that you can at least share with us or talk about. Does anything, like when you first started out with this, and I don't know if you used yourself in a different way as part of the investigation, you know, those of us who have medium psychic type abilities use ourselves in different ways. I believe you said, if I quote me, if don't quote, you know, if I'm wrong here, are you a clairaudient?
Yeah.
Okay.
And clairsentient also, but yeah.
Okay, explain that to people, what they are, and if this is what you use as your gift on some of these investigations.
Well, clairaudient just means that, it means it's a term that says clear hearing. And so spirits sometimes talk to people in their heads or in their ears, and usually it's 3 o'clock in the morning when you're trying to sleep. You hear the call out your name really loud, and that's scary, annoying too. And clairsentient is being able to feel when spirit is around you. So yeah, you use that on an investigation, but we use that in everyday life, I think, too. You know, we walk up to somebody and we can feel some bad vibes coming out of people sometimes, if they're in a bad mood or they're just bad people and you don't know them, but you kind of step back. We've all had that. You know, you've met somebody and you immediately take a dislike to them, or just the opposite. So I think we all have those capabilities, but it's a question of learning and using them, and you don't have to. I mean, I think we're all born with the same capabilities. We can, and especially like kids can see spirits. You know, they think, you know, nothing of it. And then we get talked out of it. You know, well, there's no such thing as ghosts, and don't talk about that, and that's bad, and watches movies and gets the wrong impression. So I think we all have the abilities, but it's whether we use them or not, a way to change your belief system. Because if you think you can, and you believe one way, and you prove yourself that something that you didn't think you could do, you do, that opens up a lot of doors and windows in the brain.
So,
and I think that's beautiful.
So you're on an investigation. Okay, bring us back. You're in Hollywood. Were you investigating in Hollywood, or were you just...
Yeah.
Okay, so you're on an investigation in Hollywood. People are intrigued by this. Can you remember one or more of your experiences on your investigations that, I want to use the word compelling, which means in my world here, something that was like really, I don't want to use the word shocking, but something that just kind of took you back, and something that you will never, ever forget about no matter what, because it was just that compelling. Do you have a story you can share?
Yeah, it's funny and compelling at the same time, but there is a restaurant and bar called the Formosa Cafe. It's right across the street from a studio. And for years and years, celebrities would go work at the studio and come over and sit down at the bar and have a drink and talk about their hard day. I mean, John Wayne had his own booth back there. And there's a quick John Wayne story, but I'll tell you later. But we went to investigate it because nobody had ever written about it, which was really strange. So I went in there with a friend one time and went in for dinner. It's a Chinese restaurant, and I kind of decided to ask the people that work there if they ever had that kind of experience. You know, this place has been here so long, and the history. Now, if you ask people that, you're either going to get one or two things. Somebody's going to clam up really bad and think you're crazy, or they're going to open up and tell you stuff that they probably wouldn't tell anybody else because people would think they were crazy. So we went into the Formosa Cafe, and, you know, when we went there for dinner, we weren't doing any kind of sniffing around or anything, just to see, to get stories. It was kind of amazing. So I called up my friend, who was also a witch, but she's also a medium. And I said, you know, let's go over there. And we had a videographer come with us. And the guy that owned the place now was the grandson of the original owner. So he had a ton of stories. We went in there. And I mean, this is the funny part. You could feel the history in there. Sometimes you walk into a historical place and it doesn't have to be haunted, but you can feel the history.
Yeah.
So we knew that the original owner, this guy's grandfather, was also the cook there. And the place has pictures of celebrities all over on every wall, yeah. You know, one of the framed whatever. And so I walking around and my, she said, I'm going to go in the kitchen and see what I can pick up. So she did. And I'm walking around and I'm checking out John Wayne's booth and, you know, looking at all the pictures and just kind of taking it all in, taking notes. And she comes out and she's got this weird look on her face and she's laughing at the same time. And I said, what's in there? She said, it's not what, it's who. She said, I was standing there and all of a sudden I felt like I really needed to get out of there. And she said, but I couldn't, I didn't know what it was. And she said, I waited for a minute and I said, well, who are you? And you know what, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just, you know, kind of taking this all in. And she turned around and she saw him. He showed himself. This was the grandfather, little old Chinese man, who was standing there with a meat cleaver in his hand and telling her to get out of his kitchen.
Oh, geez. Oh, my God.
So she comes out and she's like that. And I said, I had looked at some pictures while she was in there and I saw one of that guy. I mean, I knew that the grandson said, this is my grandfather. And we weren't in that part of the restaurant. And I said, Vicky, what did he look like? And she described him. And then I went, oh, my God, she did see him. So I said, come here. We got to go somewhere. And so I took her back into the area where that picture was. I said, was that him? And she said, oh, my God, yes. So that'll always stick because, I mean, it was funny. I mean, she wasn't going to get hurt. I mean, you know, but.
Well, if someone's standing there with a meat cleaver in their hands, even if they're an apparition, I'm not sure I would stick around there, Marla. So.
Well, she didn't. She tiptoed out quickly, but she was laughing at the same time because he was dead serious. That was his kitchen.
Yeah.
And he didn't want anybody in there.
Yeah.
You know, and there's this little with the Chinese meat cleaver. Yeah, it was cute. So that's one story that stuck really hard.
That
would have been nice.
Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been classic right there. But have you ever been in someone's house that of a well-known celebrity as well that maybe made its acquaintance to you directly and you knew it?
Yeah, we went, just Victoria and I, the rest of our team couldn't make it that day, but we had a date to investigate Gary Cooper's house, the late actor Gary Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went, you know, we said, well, the two of us can do it. We're good. And so we went in the house, and the owners kept it just exactly like it was when Gary Cooper lived there. So there was a wall full of pictures, and the furniture was all kind of, I think he lived there in the 1940s and 50s. So the furniture, everything, the decor in the house, a beautiful house in Beverly Hills, not far from Hugh Hefner's Playboy Mansion. And that's really a high rent district over there. And, you know, so we're looking at things and I was doing some EVPs and I was trying to get something and I was really feeling uncomfortable. And so I left the recorder in there just to see. And in the meantime, I was walking around and I walked into his bedroom, the bedroom that he died in. Now, the furniture was different, but that was the room. And that was kind of off-putting in a way because you kind of, I don't know, you know, this is right, this place, this spot is where he passed away. I hadn't heard anything about him haunting the place per se. When we were in there, we were starting to smell cigarette smoke. And he was a very, very heavy smoker, and he died of lung cancer. And at first I thought, well, maybe something's coming in from outside. Victoria picked up on it also. And she said, he's here, you know. I mean, how else are you going to recognize it's him? You know, he's not going to, I mean, unless he showed himself. But he, because he died of lung cancer and because he was known to be a prolific smoker, I mean, I think that was his way of saying hello.
Well, you hear of this stuff all the time. The only thing that comes to my mind the minute you said cigarette smoke, I'm like, yeah, talk about the, you know, I've been having an orb invasion of somebody in our house here, and I've talked about it on my shows a little bit, and there's a very light scented cigarette smell that I can always tell when this, I don't even want to call it person, apparition, whatever, is in the, in my general vicinity. I start smelling that. Now, right now, I can tell you my air is as clear as a bell, and neither my husband or I, we don't smoke, and this is just very coincidental. So you smell this cigarette smoke, right? Okay. So, so then what, how long did it last? And did you find that as a warning, like, get out, or did you feel threatened by it?
But we both got, and Victoria was picking up stronger vibes than I was at the time. But it was just like, hi, you know, you're in my house and here I am. You know, it wasn't threatening. It wasn't anything other than that. And actually, after the fact, because I didn't really read up on him or his house, because there wasn't a whole lot written about it. You know, I mean, I knew who he was, but I started doing some research after we got back, and other people. In fact, the people that own the house now, I was talking to them afterwards. They weren't there when we were there. They didn't live there at the time. But they said, "Did you smell the smoke?" And I said, "Yeah." Mm. And she said, "Well, he shows up every so often, and that's him. And you know, it's not threatening. It's just an interesting thing.
Interesting.
And we like it that he's here. You know, that he cares."
I don't know if I gave a proper enough explanation of Marla has lived in Hollywood, California for several years and had done some writing for some very, would you say, popular, I don't know if it was newspaper or magazines.
Yeah, a lot of different magazine articles, but as an entertainment writer, because you live in Hollywood, you know this stuff. You know how to get to people. I mean, yeah. So I was an entertainment writer for a lot of national magazines, did interviews with celebrities on all different kinds of things. Even I had a column in this, I don't know if I think the magazine still is. It's called Cat Fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of these age-old magazines. And they got in touch with me and asked me to do a column talking about celebrities and their pets, which is, you know, a love of mine too, anyway, pets.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I did that, but I did, you know, general interviews, depending on, you know, what they wanted, who they wanted. So, yeah, that's kind of a good background. And I lived in Hollywood for many, many, many years. I was born and raised there and lived there as an adult for way too long.
So I know people would also, now we're going to flip this back, because I wanted to have that background there. Now that we know, my question now is, have you ever run around in some of these cemeteries in your vicinity of Hollywood? Because I'm not even sure. Are people even allowed or not allowed in some specific cemeteries? You just can't, like here where I'm at, you can freely meander through wherever. But when you have the, you know, stars and celebrities that have passed away, and of course people are very intrigued to go and find their place of, you know, burial. What, tell us a little bit more about the cemeteries out in the Hollywood area.
Okay, well, there's one Hollywood cemetery that is in Hollywood proper. Most of them are not quite in Hollywood. It's called Hollywood Forever. And that's where my whole family's buried. So it's a place that I've gone many, many times. It's very, very calming to me. And lots of people. Rudolph Valentino is there. I mean, everybody from way back in the 20s to, you know, recent things. Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland are there now.
Mm.
Well, Mickey Rooney was supposed to be there, but they brought Judy Garland from New York back to Hollywood Forever.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's such a historical cemetery. It's wonderful. I love it. It's very haunted, but it's like one of these things that everybody says, oh, cemeteries are haunted. The dead are hanging out there all the time. Well, no. You know, when I die, I'm not going to be hanging around the cemetery. I could go every place, anywhere else I want to go. But there are certain times and certain people that actually do kind of hang out there. There's a lot of stories about a wailing woman who's, you know, crying over her grave because she died early, and that was a celebrity called, I've never learned how to pronounce his last name, but it's R-A-P-P-E. I don't know if it's Virginia Rapp or Rappe, but she was the one that was killed, that Fatty Arbuckle, a very old comedian way, way, way back in the silent days. She had gone to a party that he was there, and they say that they went and had sex, but he was using a bottle, and it broke, and she got very ill. She got peritonitis or something, and she died.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's the one that's supposedly hanging on at her grave and weeping, you know, because it was just not right. That's as the story goes. There's so many famous people buried there that it's really kind of interesting. You know, like I said, Rudolph Valentino is there, and there's stories behind that. Bugsy Siegel, the gangster, he's there. He's buried in the Jewish side. There's a Jewish side, a Christian side, and then there's a non-denominational thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, I love the place. Like I said, people get really nervous about going into cemeteries, but you can walk around there. They even have kiosks where you can call up. They give you maps when you come in, who's buried where.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to the kiosk and type in a name, and they'll give you a whole history of the person and where they were buried. And it's really, really interesting. And they do that not only for the celebrities, but for anybody that gets buried there. They have their life stories there.
Interesting.
So
will you have your life story there? Are you planning to be buried there?
I would like to be. I don't know if I can afford it now. But
yeah, I know. Very spendy out there in California. Very spendy.
Yeah, and with the whole family there, I'm working on it because I'd like to be with the family.
Wouldn't that be interesting to have in the kiosk your whole little bit of a biography on you and your show? Oh, that would be very interesting to come and
visit. Anybody
you.
Would care.
Oh,
you know?
I would.
But there are people that, do, and especially the ones that are looking after the actors and the famous people. I mean, it's really nice because you're seeing them, you're standing at the foot of their graves or in the mausoleums, whatever, and sometimes you want to know a little bit more about them. You get curious, so you just go over to the kiosk and do it, and I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Now, where do they bury, Michael Jackson and some of these other ones that are more recent?
Oh, there's a lot of different cemeteries. I don't know where he is. Get me wrong. He might be in Forest Lawn.
Yeah.
There are two Forest Lawns. There's one in Glendale and one in Hollywood Hills.
Right.
So I think that's where he is. There's a really good book. Well, there's several good books out about where people are buried. I've had people on my show that would have written books about that.
Okay.
But if people are really interesting, and I'm going to give one of my best friends a plug. His name is Scott Michaels, and he ran Dearly Departed Tours. But he also has a website called findadeath.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not gruesome or anything like that. He has hundreds and hundreds of celebrities, where they're buried. He has stories about them. Really, really interesting stuff. I mean, he knows where the bodies were buried and how they got there kind of thing. So, and he knows a lot of people. So that's, if people are interested in that kind of thing, because he's got everybody from Aunt B from Andy Griffith's show to, people from way back when. And whenever somebody dies, he tries to keep up.
Is that on Amazon? Can that book be found on Amazon?
It's not a book, it's a website.
Okay.
And it's findadeath.com. Now, he's got a YouTube channel, Dearly Departed. He changed it because with COVID, he's not doing tours anymore, clearly.
Yeah.
But it's Dearly, but I think the website's Dearly Departed Tours. There's a whole bunch of stuff there that will point people to that kind of thing because it's a lot of old Hollywood stuff. I mean, it's really good information and some of it's kind of scandalous. He has no problem, writing stuff like that. he has lots of pictures and some of them are not so great. Yeah, so
I think that's really, thanks for that information because I know many people are probably researching findadeath.com as we speak. So I have a question for you. So when you're in the cemetery, whether it's the one that your family's buried in or other cemeteries, have you ever had an experience with something there trying to capture your attention and what happened?
I was at Hollywood Forever. And I was in one of the mausoleums. The Catholic mausoleum is kind of, it's really beautiful, but it's really creepy in some ways. But I was walking around, there was an old film producer years ago called William Desmond Taylor. And he was accused of killing somebody, and he probably did, but it's still a cold case. Sometimes you give up from, guys aren't going to go back into the 1920s and start trying to figure it out. He was not a nice man, but he was a very famous Hollywood producer at the time. And I was, for the book, I was going in and taking, oh no, it was for an article I was doing on the cemetery. I was taking pictures of their different gravestones or in the mausoleum, their plaque. And I was in there and I found him, track it down. And I was just standing there for a minute, just thinking about it, just not paying much attention. And I'm not a coward. I'm not somebody that screams and runs and whatever. As I was standing there, all of a sudden, it was like I was having a panic attack. I mean, I was really, really put off. And I stood there for a minute and I thought, no, this is silly. You know, it's just your imagination. But it got so bad that I literally turned around and ran out the mausoleum. And a friend of mine was walking in at the time, so that made it kind of funny because I really did crash into him. But there's always a light side to everything. Yeah, so, I mean, I think he was realizing that I was thinking he was a jerk of some kind and just wanted me out of there. And then one other quick thing was we were there doing something. I don't remember what. But we were in a section. The tombstones were one after the other. I mean, really tight. They were like kind of running out of room at that time. And we were videotaping something, and I walked over to get out of the way, and I was leaning on a tombstone, a tall one, and I'm, you know, watching what everybody was doing. And all of a sudden, I got a tight chest, and I started getting chest pains. And I thought, this is weird, you know, and I stood there for a minute, and I was still leaning on the thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, God, they're going to have to call 911, you know, I mean, it was like that. So I stepped away from the tombstone to go talk to somebody and say, look, this is really weird. I'm not feeling good. But the minute I let contact with the tombstone, it went away.
Interesting. Did you, the tombstone that you were leaning on, do you remember, was that a celebrity or just somebody. Average Joe person. Yeah.
Average Joe is a woman. And, you know, but she must have maybe died of a heart attack. And that's part of being, you know, clairsentient, you feel things. But I didn't even for a minute think that, you know, I just thought I was having a panic attack, a heart attack. I don't know what, but, you know, maybe her energy was so strong that she wanted to let people know how she died. I don't know. I tried to look it up, but, I mean, there was nothing I could find
on her. Yeah. I find that to be really interesting. And I often wonder, because you hear of this with psychics and individuals such as yourself with very special gifts, I call it, that a lot of times they get bombarded with not just one, but several. Now, I have heard, you know, sometimes the opposite, that not many souls, when they depart, hang out in the cemetery at all. Maybe one or two or whatever. And then I also hear that there are some awfully negative forces that can also hang out in a cemetery. I don't know why or what compels them, unless it was someone very angry, you know, they brought that attitude with them wherever they departed to. But have you ever run into anything so negative or so, I mean, that to me, I'm trying to think in the back of my head, how would I classify that? Would I classify your experience as being one with, she's trying to tell you how she might have died, or is something or somebody around you in some way and is attacking you because they can see your, I call it, see your beam, feel your frequency, know your, know you can feel that. What are your thoughts on that? Have you ever been attacked literally before?
Not in a bad way. I mean, I haven't been slapped or scratched or anything like that, but again, comic relief. I was in an old fire station, Hollywood's oldest fire station, that's not in use anymore. It's a museum now.
Yeah.
And we were walking around, a whole bunch of us walking around, and I was kind of trailing everybody, and they were going upstairs into something to look. And I'm kind of, you know, 20 feet behind them and just kind of looking at some of the artifacts that they had in there and everything. And as I was walking up the stairs, somebody came behind me and grabbed my butt.
Oh, that thing again. Okay. Yeah. Continue.
Yeah, well, firemen, you know, you never know, you know.
Yep, you never know.
But I've never had anything negative in any of the investigations. There was one, we were at the Hollywood Wax Museum one time, and there's all kinds of little passages and hallways and stuff with the various displays. And Victoria, the witch, my friend, the medium, she was walking kind of ahead of us, and we got to one spot, and you had to go down this hallway, and she took a step in there, and she said, wait, I got to cleanse that place. She said, there's really bad mojo in here, or whatever.
Yeah.
So she did a quick spell to cleanse it, and then we could walk through it. So, I mean, there are places that have that heaviness, that feeling, and sometimes you wonder, oh, that was the other thing at the Wax Museum. Scott Michaels, dearly departed, and I were there, and there were other people, too, in different areas, and we were standing in this corridor, and not to be mean to the museum, but some of the wax figures don't
like they are. Yeah.
Like. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we were in this hallway, and it was just a corridor. And I mean, nobody could walk behind us because it was like a one person line kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at Bela Lugosi's thing, and I'm like, oh God, that's not good. And all of a sudden, we heard footsteps. So I kind of looked, you know, over to the side. I thought some of the people that we were with were coming, and there was nobody there. And Scott's not really, he had not done many investigations, but I'm hearing footsteps, and they're getting closer, and they're getting closer, and I'm not saying anything because I didn't want to scare him. And apparently he heard it and didn't want to say a thing because he was scared. So the footsteps kept coming, and they came closer, and they walked right behind us. Clunk, 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 clunk. And kept on going. And at that point, when they started to fade out, now I'm only 5'3", and he's 6 foot something. So we're standing there next to each other, and the minute they started to fade, I looked up, and he looked down, and he said, you heard that too, didn't you?
Yeah.
I said, somebody's just taking a walk. So, yeah.
Did you by chance feel this apparition, entity, whatever you want to call it, manifestation of somebody maybe, walk right through you? Did you ever feel that? Have you ever felt that before?
Oh, God, yes. It's horrible. Okay, another story. There used to be, he's passed away a long time ago, but he was very famous. His name was Kenny Kingston, and he was the psychic to the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his own TV show. Later years, he had his own tarot reading thing. Anyway, I was at Kenny's house one day. I learned a lot about ghosties and stuff from him. I mean, you know, he'd been around for years and years. So I was at his house, and we were arranging an interview with somebody on the internet, and he wasn't very internet savvy. We had to move something over to the computer, and as I was walking to one end of the room to the other, I felt like somebody dumped cold water on me.
Mm-hmm.
and went right through me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what that was.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I was moving a chair. I was carrying a chair, and I kind of dropped the chair. I looked at Kenny, and I said, something walked through me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I wasn't really as savvy then as I am now. And he goes, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. It happens here all the time.
Oh, how nice.
So, yeah, but that was an ugly feeling. I mean, it wasn't negative. I mean, it wasn't dangerous, but it was just came out of the blue, and it just felt creepy.
Yeah. When I go into trances, which I hate going into trances, but I do when I reach a certain frequency, there was a time when I was, and I talked about it when I was in Vegas, and there are many experiences I've had in Vegas, but anyway, the way you describe the icy cold kind of water feeling going right through you and all that, well, when I go into trances, especially like sometimes when I'm in the shower, standing there, practically could drown for a period of time, I can feel it go from my feet all the way up through my body, cold, icy cold, and I can actually feel it depart my head and leave my head, and as if something were either inside of me or had tried to be inside of me or whatever. But have you ever been in a trance, Marla, and ever felt that feeling?
No, I don't. I mean, I have, because I do, sometimes I do inadvertent channeling. I don't realize I'm doing it.
Yep.
Not intentionally, no. And even Kenny, when he would go into trance before he would do seances and things like that, he would only go into a light trance.
Yeah.
Although, on my show for several years on Halloween, my partner in crime at the time, he was my producer, he's one of my best friends too, Reverend Tim Shaw, we did a seance on the air live. It started when we had the CBS show because they wanted something neat for Halloween. And Tim goes into deep trance. You know, I'm the only one talking to him. And you know, he said, well, he gave me a word that would probably get him out if he needed to. But every time he came out, you know, he's bad. And I'm kind of like drooling on my keyboard, you know, and it takes him a while to get back into it. So, yeah, that's not where I want to go.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not comfortable with that, so I don't.
Oh, I hate it. I think I like to term it as, for me, someone taking possession of my body, yeah. which puts me into this trance, which the scariest moment that I had when I was in this deep trance was in, I hate to plug it all the time, but it's, I mean, I can't help it. Zach Bagans Haunted Museum, when I went into and was slammed with, and by the way, Marla, you mentioned one thing that I usually do too. Not always, but sometimes I'm always the last one in the group and, you know, dragging along. Well, in this case, I was the first one in the group and I got slammed with something in the stairwell. But anyway, I went into this deep trance. And when I was looking out very briefly through my eyes, all I saw were like three or four dark shadows of the people that were standing around me wondering what the heck to do with me. But, you know, and then I actually felt it come out eventually. Whatever it was, or it was coming off of me. But that leads us into the next question I've got for you, which will be on spells. But before we get into spells, I'm sure everybody is going to want to know this, so we might as well just clarify it right now. Do you own a black cat?
No, I own a tabby cat.
Did you say tabby?
Black and gray.
Black and gray tabby cat. And that's so great. Tell us a little bit about, when we're thinking about witches again, and we're going to get into spells here in just a moment. Tell us just a little bit about this aspect of the black cat. Anything you can enlighten us on that?
You know, I think people hate black cats because they think they're all evil.
Yeah.
Because it goes back to the fact that black is a negative color.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Color.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I should look that up. But every time you read about witches in history having familiars, they're always a black cat.
Yeah.
And I think it's maybe because, and this is, I'm just making this up in my head, but I think maybe because witches were outcasts for a long time, and so were black cats.
Yeah.
The two joined together. And made a good pair.
Interesting. Well, I know that some cats, I've seen some black cats, they're absolutely beautiful, but they're mysterious too. You know, very, very mysterious. Tell us a little bit about spells, because a lot of people might have a misconception about what a spell really is or what it does. Can you enlighten us a little bit about spells?
Yeah, spells are like manipulating the energy around you for a specific reason. And it's not manipulating people or whatever. It's just doing things. Some people do it for good, some people do it for evil. It's kind of like a prayer, you know. When you cast a spell, you're speaking to the universe. And when you actually say a prayer, you're speaking to the man upstairs in the universe. You know, I believe there's only one supreme being, and then there's a lot of other things going on, but that's different. So you're asking for something to happen. You do it by words. You do it. Sometimes you use tools. You do manifestation. You see it being done. And you just, you know, you can create a spell. Is something that you say, but it's kind of like sending out a prayer at the same time, because you're asking for something to happen.
So it's like an intention.
It's very much an intention. The only way it works is if you have an honest, not honest intention, but a strong intention that it will happen.
So not to put you on the spot here, but do you have a very simple statement that people can say and how they should act in the process? And of course, I'm going to say this should be a positive thing, wishing is probably the wrong word, but putting out an intention for something negative. Can you go into the positive, negative aspects of this and what people should and should not do?
Yeah, well, if you're religious and you ask for prayers, stick to that, because it's not going to hurt anybody. People that don't know about spell work and just pick it up something off the internet, oh, look, I got this spell to do this or that. There's so much more to it. You can harm other people, even if you're doing a good spell. Can harm yourself. It can bounce back at you. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to understand the nature of a spell and what you can do. So, like I said, anybody can do one, but not everybody should. Because, like I said, you could you could really do some damage. People think that, okay, well, I found it on the internet. I found this spell. Well, on this, it's never a good thing to do somebody else's spells unless you really know who the person is. And there can be a lot of people on the internet who write spells with very bad intention attached to them. So that when the people, when the kids or whoever pick up that spell and do it, it will rebound in a bad way. I mean, I wrote two spell books and I tell people, you know me, you trust me, get the books. You know, but if you don't. It's just that simple. So it's very harmful. There are rituals that go along with some spells. There's all different kinds of spells and magic. There's candle magic, which is pretty much easy for anybody to do. There are things that are very, very complex. You know, people make potions, people make brews, people are, you know, using herbs and they go by phases of the moon and stuff. It sounds really easy. You know, okay, I'm a witch and I can do a spell, but it's so dangerous. It is so dangerous that I don't recommend it unless, you know, you do your homework first.
So is there a difference between then spells and wishes? Because if we can differentiate between that, would wishes or wishing on something, again, we're not here to promote anything negative. I think that that can also bounce back on a person and be just as ugly. So you got to be very careful about this. But what are your thoughts about wishes then?
Well, wishing is like praying, I think. You know, it's kind of one and the same thing. You want something to happen. Praying, you usually pray to God or whoever, the deities, and with wishing too. Sometimes you wish in your heart and sometimes you wish out loud. So there is a similarity, but it's how you do it. It's basically wishing and prayers and all that. It's manifestation.
Yeah.
You manifest in your head what you want to have happen. And then how you go about it, if you're asking for, you know, the god and the goddess to help you, or a particular saint, or, you know, an ascended master or something like that, or just God or Jesus, you know, that's how you send it out. But like with a candle spell, you'll do the candle spell, and when you blow out candle wick, you take the smoke in your hands and you rub it between your palms, and then you open your palms and let it go up to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. So, you know, there's a thousand ways. I mean, there are a million different types of witches. There are a million different types of spells, and nobody does it the same way twice. I mean, we all kind of follow guidelines and things, but we each do it differently because that what works for you might not work for me.
When it involves candles, and I've heard many different thoughts on candles. So can a person just make a good, positive, I don't want to say intention or wish to a candle?
Yeah.
Some people say, well, if you use green, and again, you've got to be realistic here. I'm not saying this to Marla. I'm saying this to our listeners. Be a little bit realistic here, because you know how many times I've prayed to win the lottery, you know? Sometimes things just don't happen when you're dealing with one out of 346 million or whatever people have a chance of winning the big grand prize. So, you know, the thing is, but I've heard, okay, so if you want money, or you're wishing for money, or maybe that's just getting a job or something that will bring you money, wish to a green candle. Well, okay, what are your thoughts on candle colors?
I have a whole chapter of that in my two spell books about what colors you should use and what incense you should burn. You know, they all have properties. And yeah, green for money, red for love, you know, all the different colors have a purpose. So you get the candle. And if people want to do that, you don't need to have colored candles. White will work for anything. And I'll just, the simplest way to do a candle spell, and, you know, again, be careful, be warned, I'm not saying do it, but you get the incense that goes along with the color that you're using, you get the candle, and the best way is to get a pin and write on the candle what you want, you know, your intention. You can do keywords, you don't have to write a whole paragraph because it's kind of hard to write on a candle with a pin. But, and then you let the candle burn down. I mean, it's really easy, but the colors do make a difference, and also the scents. Or you can anoint the candle with essential oil for the same purpose. The oils and the incense have the same properties.
Do you?
So some people like.
Do you let the candle burn down like in one shot, or can you blow it out and then burn it again and make your intention, and then over time it'll burn down?
Just repeat it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, I mean, even little tiny tea candles, you know, those little tiny ones, tea lights.
Oh, yeah.
You could write a word, you know, health or something, and then you can say out loud, explain what you're doing. And so that one will burn out right away. But, yeah, most, and you never want to leave a candle going without being there. You know, but people do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can start it and light it again. And I would say light it again when you do, you know, anoint it with the oil or do the incense again.
Okay.
Just to kind of refresh it.
All right. What if you're allergic to some of these oils and some of these scents? Are they necessary to go along with the candle?
No. Again, it's your intention that makes it happen. So get a white unscented candle, write on it, and concentrate on that.
Okay.
And again, it's intention. I mean, yes, I think it helps a little bit with colors and stuff because it helps you envision what you're doing. It's more for you than the spell.
How about time aspect? You know, there was a long time ago where I used to do a candle intention like that, and it took me, I gave up, actually. I was praying for, well, believe it or not, this is, you know, I was praying for my husband, okay? I was dating an awful lot of men, and I just was not finding, there was no connection being made. So a psychic told me to start doing like meditation to a lit candle and then blow it out and send your intention. Okay, so I did this every single day in the dark, literally for six to 8 months, and just absolutely not having any success. And then as soon as I stopped doing it, I would say within a month, then all of a sudden my husband basically fell right into my lap, and we've been married now for 28 years. But the thing is that, so what would you say to people about length of time to make their intention manifest? And as usual, just about the time you get to the good part, we have to go. So head on over to part two of the interview with Ms. Marla Brooks. And again, thank you so much for listening to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. As always, I hope to bring you interesting guests and segments as we continue to move on into our future. Thank you, and good night.